Welcome to For the Health of It, starring Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor. She is joined by her co-host Jessica and producer Mike Clark. They will inspire you to eat, move, sleep, think, and live better.
Here we are once again. We are doing an In the News segment, and I tell you, we got some good stuff here.
Oh, yay.
Oh, yeah. So the jumping right in, the first article is called Roughhousing with Your Kids Keeps Them Emotionally Intelligent, Ethical, and Physically Fit.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding at all. This is Natural News, Ethan Huff, staff writer. So, Mike, growing up, you had siblings. You have siblings, right?
Yes, five.
Okay, so was there a lot of roughhousing going on in your house?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Wrestling and, you know.
I mean, I think who I am as a person is greatly influenced by how much, can I say the word crap?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got from my brothers growing up. My two older brothers were, they just toughened me up.
Yeah, it's good for you.
You name it.
Yeah.
Now, Jessica, you only have sisters.
I tortured my sisters, but not physically.
Mentally, yes. I can understand that. That's what you girls do.
In a more girly, manipulative way. Okay.
Yes, but I did have friends in the neighborhood that had brothers, and they beat me up, so.
Oh, yeah. So this is what this article says. Modern society has become obsessed with keeping everything as sanitary, standardized, risk-free, and safe as possible.
Oh, how boring.
But this approach to life is making it difficult for younger generations to learn important life lessons and build strong character, because many of the activities and social interactions that have been long a part of growing up in the past are now considered by some to be too dangerous. That is so true. I mean, I didn't grow up with a helmet.
Oh, everyone's so terrified of everything now.
I'd go so far away from home, and I didn't have any access to a telephone. I just had to be home by a certain time. I didn't even have a watch. Like, as soon as the sun would start to set, I could start meandering.
We used to run around the neighborhood. I mean, my parents didn't know where we were.
Oh, my brother's playing with BB guns all the time with no protective eyewear.
Why is everyone so afraid now? I don't understand. Is it the media?
Well, let's see what this article says.
Okay.
Because this is referencing a piece that was in a publication called The Art of Manliness by Brett and Kate McKay. And it highlights the importance of parents actually roughhousing with their children. So it says, you know, things like chasing your child around the house while pretending to be a monster, wrestling with him and putting him in a headlock, throwing her up in the air and catching her, or swinging him around in a circle while holding his feet. I totally grew up doing that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Me too. I broke a couple bones, but
I remember my uncle. He was a very tall man, and I was maybe, you know, 8. And I would face him, and we would hold hands, and then I would walk my feet up his body until it got to almost his shoulders. And then he would flip me back around backwards.
I've done that.
Oh, that was so fun.
Well, I think, any more physical activity would be great for the kids nowadays. I don't think kids get enough anyway because of television and video games and all that. So,
that's probably why they
wrote this article, wouldn't you say?
Well, and they go on to actually cite some research about the brain. So it says first, citing numerous experts on the subject, the piece demonstrates the importance of roughhousing, and particularly parents roughhousing with their own children in developing youngsters that are smart, emotionally intelligent, lovable and likable, ethical, physically fit, and joyful. It actually says when children miss out on that important part of growing up, they're more likely to be unable to deal with the stresses of life, or for instance, to be able to think rationally in difficult situations. So as far as the whole brain smarts are concerned, they cite research into animal and human brains, which has found that various rough and tumble activities actually induce the production of brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is BDNF. It's a chemical that spurs neuronal growth in the parts of the brain responsible for memory, logic, and higher learning skills.
Jeez, I thought it was just fun.
Well, and you would think, well, all that rough and tumble just leads to like promoting violence.
Right.
It actually says that many people will claim that roughhousing has actually been shown to produce the opposite effect. This man, Dr. Stuart Brown, he's an expert on play. Wouldn't that be fun? I'm an expert on play. What a cool job. He says that roughhousing, which often involves a situation where a child wins on some occasions and loses on others, helps temper potential violent impulses by teaching him or her about the give-and-take nature of social interactions. And then children can learn about proper boundaries, including how to play around in an aggressive yet loving and compassionate way.
When to tap out.
Yeah, exactly. How engaging things like plastic sword fight battles and like soft punch boxing matches, for example, causes children to learn how to use their strength and power in a morally acceptable way later in life.
Nice.
You know, this reminds me of a news story that I saw a while back about a 6-year-old that was found in a ditch behind the wheel of a car because he took the car and tried to drive to school, but ended up driving off the road. And the police officer asked him, how did you learn to drive? And he said, video games.
Wow.
So I guess if the moral of the story is if kids are roughhousing more and playing video games a little bit less,
you actually learn your physical boundaries.
Right.
There you go.
Right.
That's interesting. Okay, well, moving on. This was on a website called Wake Up World, wakeup-world.com. This is the title. Happy 69-year-old lady has not used money for 15 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What do you mean not used money?
Okay, so this woman, Heidi Marie Schwarmer, she's 69 years old and she lives in Germany, gave up using money 15 years ago and says she's been much happier ever since.
Barter system?
Well, she actually started a swap shop, which is called a Tauschring in German, and she called it Gib und Nimm, which means give and take. And what she did in this shop was anyone could trade stuff and skills for other things and skills they needed without a single coin or banknote even changing hands. So, for example, old clothes could be traded in for kitchen appliances and car service rendered in return for plumbing services and so on. And the more she ran the shop, she realized, you know, she was living with a lot of stuff that she didn't really need. And she initially decided not to buy anything else without giving something away. But this led eventually in 1996... huge decision. She wanted to learn to live without money. So she sold her apartment and decided to live nomadically, basically living in people's homes as she traded something for the ability to stay there. And it was supposed to just be like a 12-month experiment, but she loved it so much she didn't give it up. So Schwarmer has written two books about her experience of living without money, and she's asked her publisher to give the money to charity so she can make many people happy instead of just one.
That's fascinating.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Now, she does carry 200 Deutschmark on her in case she has an emergency. But other than that, all of her belongings fit into a single back suitcase and a rucksack and doesn't have any health insurance. And the article says she relies on the power of self-healing whenever she gets a little sick.
That's so old school.
I love it.
So do you know that they do that around here? They have towns that have barter systems.
You know, I have heard about that. When you say around here, like really, like around, well, like in New Hampshire?
Where my parents live, in Antrim.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Going back to natural news, this is an article, again, written by Ethan Huff, staff writer. It's titled, FDA Monopoly Enforcement Goes After Google for $500 million in Online Pharmacy Ad Profits. Have you heard about this?
No.
No.
Okay, so basically what happened was, Google was running advertisements, you know, their whole AdWords service they do.
Yep.
They were doing advertisements for Canadian pharmacies. So the FDA claims that these ads, which were also viewable by Americans, facilitated the illegal shipment of prescription drugs into the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting because it talks about how this, basically it's a $500 million forfeiture. How it demonstrates the FDA's intolerance for the sale of any drug that's not officially FDA approved.
They want to make them cash.
But the whole thing is they settled it outside of court. So basically Google got a slap on the hand, paid the money, the FDA got some money, but they can still keep doing it.
Oh, that's weird.
And the only thing different is the FDA got a small slice of the Google empire. And when you really think about it, the FDA just wanted a piece of the pie. That's right. Google's profits. And they really could care less about consumer safety because it didn't change anything.
That's not a shocker.
I know. The Justice Department made a note that Google acted as an accomplice to the crime by enhancing the ability of Canadian pharmacies to reach American consumers. That was in the New York Times. But it's a blurry zone because they didn't actually commit the crime.
Well, it's not illegal to buy.
Well, I feel like I can't comment on this situation because, you know, I don't know what the FDA is going to say.
That's true.
It's not illegal to buy pharmaceuticals from Canada, though, is it?
These were illegal.
Wow.
It was an illegal shipment of prescription drugs into the U.S.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, very interesting. So, yeah, no personal opinion necessarily, but just thought we would talk about that.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Moving along.
It's fascinating. And then we go on to an article by Jonathan Benson that's called Pharmaceutical Waste Runoff Causing Shrimp and Other Marine Life to Commit Suicide.
What?
Yeah. Okay, so this is...
How do they do that?
It happens. Okay, so the crustaceans, which are the shrimp, they're not actually taking antidepressant drugs because of a prescription. But what's happening is the research through the University of Portsmouth, this is in the UK, found that pharmaceutical waste runoff... and particularly that of antidepressant drugs like Prozac, is causing shrimp and other exposed crustaceans to change their behavior in ways that are causing many more of them than usual to die off. So what happens is the shrimps are exposed to antidepressants from waste runoff. They're 5 times more likely to swim towards the light, which means that they're more likely to encounter fishermen's nets and birds that are hungry for a meal.
So they check into a seafood restaurant. That's how they commit suicide? I was wondering how they did that.
They would normally stay in more protected areas, but they're drug-induced, and they're basically committing suicide by gravitating towards situations that end up resulting in early death. So we can eat them, and they're toxic with antidepressants.
Right.
And of course, there's concern because it could seriously upset the whole natural balance of the ecosystem.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a comment by Alex Ford, who's a lead researcher of the study. And interestingly, back in 2008, it was discovered that the water supplies of 24 major metropolitan cities in the U.S. were contaminated with drug residues. And that's even after having been filtered through, you know, typical treatment methods.
How does that happen? Do people flush their
They
old
flush them. It could dumb. Be in their personal waste.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But aren't there like ships that just drop that stuff when they're not supposed to?
Yeah.
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 Well, and they said included in the mix were anti-seizure and anti-inflammatory medications, painkillers, caffeine, and antidepressants. So what's really sad is, you know, it's really hard to be drug-free.
It really is.
Even if you're just drinking water.
Yeah.
Are they selling real estate on the moon yet?
Soon.
That might be a great place to... a safe place to move.
Yeah, it's not toxic yet.
We'll just start a new world.
Unless they are shipping hospital waste to the moon and we don't know about it yet.
Oh, no.
It could be.
Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, speaking of waste, we're going to talk about a new chemical sweetener that the FDA doesn't even require labeling of that could be in organic foods. We're going to talk about a girl who's only eaten chicken nuggets her entire life and what's happening to her health. We'll talk about how to forgive, and we'll talk about chiropractic versus medical education.
You're listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. Your host is Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor at Spinal Corrective Center in Amherst, New Hampshire. For more information about Dr. Jennifer or this podcast, check out spinalcorrectivecenter.com. If you would like to schedule a health checkup with Dr. Jennifer, call 603-673-5600 and mention this podcast to receive a special offer. That's 603-673-5600. To find a wellness chiropractor in your area, go to chiropractic.org/doctorfinder. Now, back to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it.
Let's talk about Neotame. Have you heard about Neotame?
No, it doesn't sound good, though.
This was on Natural News. It's like the next aspartame. According to this, Jonathan Benson, staff writer, FDA doesn't require labeling of the latest chemical sweetener from, guess who? Monsanto.
Oh.
So he says, it could be lurking in the foods you eat every single day, including U.S. Department of, well, including... including the USDA certified organic foods, and you would never even know it.
Well, how can they get away with that, though?
Well,
payola.
The FDA has declared that one of Monsanto's latest creations, it's a synthetic sweetener chemical known as Neotame, does not have to be labeled in food products, including even in organic food products. So it's a modified version of aspartame.
Are they using it in agriculture? Is that why they don't have to label it?
No, it's because back in 2002, the FDA approved it very quietly and very unassumingly, it says, even though no safety studies have ever been conducted on the chemical. But now they're saying that it metabolizes into formaldehyde when consumed, just like aspartame, except this time the chemical contains added 3-dimethylbutyl, which the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has listed as one of the most hazardous known chemicals, and it doesn't have to be labeled on any of the products which to choose. So it says, like aspartame, some of the concerns include gradual neurotoxic and immunotoxic damage from the combination of the formaldehyde metabolite, which is toxic at extremely low doses, and the excitotoxic amino acid.
So we Monsanto, don't we?
Well, Jeez. I'll finish up with the last paragraph. It says, "This dog and pony show of special interest regulatory corruption is a travesty that will have global negative health consequences. Like most other toxins added to foods, neotame will most likely cause chronic damage over a long period of time, which means mainstream health authorities will get away with never having to admit that neotame is a dangerous toxin." Okay, so that place in Antrim where you don't have to have money, can you grow all your own food too?
I'm moving there too.
I know. Well, I thought the same thing after I read a similar article, and I wish I had it in front of me, but basically it was saying, and it may have been from Natural News, I can't remember, that MSG is now being used in agriculture. And it doesn't have to be labeled. Yeah. And of course, the wind is blowing and it ends up, you know, it can end up on organic food too. Another reason why I want to grow my own while it's still legal.
Well, and I think one thing we can take away from many of these articles we've been reading is that to be educated and to take control of your own health through making decisions of what you eat, being very, very mindful of where you purchase your food and who has grown your food. It's critical to health.
And yeah, if you it's look getting at, tougher and tougher too.
Yeah, and you look at you look at the level of cancers happening and autoimmune disorders.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
It is. Yeah. All of this matters. And unfortunately, this girl, Stacey Irving, has not gotten that. The article is called "Hooked on Chicken Nuggets. Girl, 17, who has eaten nothing else since age 2, rushed to hospital after collapsing."
Wow.
Now, she's a factory.
I don't even know what to say
she's there. A factory worker, and she's been warned by her doctors that her appalling diet could kill her. It says she has never tasted fresh fruit or vegetables. She's 17 years old.
I'm surprised she lived as long as she did.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the process that they use for making chicken McNuggets?
I know it's on all over Facebook.
That went viral on Facebook.
Yeah, I saw that. It was wow.
But can you imagine a 15-year chronic chicken nugget addiction?
No.
I mean, she has anemia, she has inflamed veins on her tongue, she's deficient in vitamins and minerals. And the thing is, she's been urged that she has to drastically change her diet, but she says she can't give up the fast food. It's just, it's like a serious addiction.
That'll hurt you bad. Well, you saw Super Size Me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so did to him.
Yeah, it's the same idea.
Yep. But,
and she says that McDonald's chicken nuggets are her favorite, and she shares them with her boyfriend with French fries, although they call them chips there in the UK. But she also likes KFC and supermarket brands. And it says a less serious consequence of her craving is that she is struggling to store all the free toys that come with the fast food meals.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was just kind of an interesting piece. Now, moving on to something we can control quite well, I wouldn't say easily, but we can control is forgiving. Here's a quote, an unknown author. "Not forgiving is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die."
I think guys are more forgiving than girls, no? You guys hold a
grudge. To each other?
Yeah.
Guys to each other, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the article says that they found forgiveness as one of the most misunderstood concepts from coast to coast. And the author says, "When I encourage clients to forgive a grievance, many of them feel I do not really comprehend their situation. They believe my advice should be to never talk to the person again, not to forgive them. And this is a common reaction due to the misunderstanding of what forgiveness is all about." So this is what she says. "The most common misconception about forgiveness is that two people are required for it to work. This is not true. You can forgive people who are no longer here or with whom you no longer have contact. Forgiving is all about you. Deciding whether to hold anger or release it occurs in your mind. How do you want to feel? What do you want taking up your space in your brain and body? It's your choice. Forgiveness is not condoning the actions of the other party. It's not rolling over and giving up. It's not giving in or losing anything. Forgiveness frees you from resentment prison."
It's bad energy. That's what it is.
But you also store those emotions in your body and they can show up physically.
Absolutely.
"Consider this, not forgiving also creates feelings of constriction, and those feelings, which are energy and attract like energy, block the flow of your abundance." And I know that's very new agey, but it's really quite true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So here's a short exercise that I would like you to try.
Right now?
Yes.
Do I have to do something wrong first so you can forgive me?
Oh, I'm sure it won't be hard to find something.
Oh.
No, actually, nothing you did wrong. It's just a person that maybe you have a grudge against. So make a mental list of someone in your life who, or you can list all the people, but let's pick one person in your life that you are holding a grudge against. Close your eyes and visualize a negative cord of energy that's active resentment attaching you to that person. So imagine a physical cord between you. Next, take a deep breath and see that cord being cut with both of you gently floating apart. releasing the negative energetic bind. Continue to do this until you feel you have released the experience. If you are still struggling, write an unedited letter to the offender expressing all of your feelings. Read the letter to a trusted friend or simply aloud, and then burn it someplace safe. Visualize the energetic cord being cut while you are burning the letter and silently repeat, "I am free." Repeat the releasing process as needed and watch what shifts in your life.
That worked well until the cutting the cord thing. I stabbed the person with my scissors.
Uh-oh.
Then I burnt them.
Well, if you've been listening to this radio show for any length of time, you do know that Mike is a work in progress.
At least he's getting adjusted now.
That's right. I feel good, too.
And speaking of getting adjusted, here's an article by Gary Farr, Dr. Gary Farr, and it's called Comparison of Chiropractic versus Medical Education.
Do you know I love getting adjusted?
You do?
Yes. That's it makes me feel so much better.
You were adjusted yesterday.
I know. I felt fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love that.
I know.
There's hope. There's hope for all of you out there.
Even me.
So the author says, chiropractors go through an immense amount of schooling to receive a Doctor of Chiropractic degree, also known as a DC. Their collegiate agenda is as follows, and I can personally verify this. Graduate from a four-year college, completing at least 2 years of undergraduate study with a focus on the sciences, 4 years of chiropractic education, potential internships, 900 hours of work in a chiropractic clinic. After graduating, passing a written and oral board exams at national and state levels. There's actually four levels of national exams, and then there's a state exam as well. And then, of course, there's specialties that can include chiropractic neurology, radiology, sports medicine, pediatrics. And then he actually lists the number of hours spent in class. For example, taking anatomy classes, number of hours, chiropractic is 520, medical is 508, physiology, there's more for chiropractic at 420 versus 326 for medical. Now, pathology, that's where you study the names of diseases. Mm-hmm. There's more for medical, 335 versus 271 for chiropractic. They're about the same for chemistry. They're about the same for bacteriology. They're the same, almost the exact same for diagnosis. There's more. There's quite a bit more for neurology, as you can imagine, because mm-hmm. chiropractic's all about the nervous system. There's right. 320 hours for chiropractic and 112 for medical. And there's also quite a bit more chiropractic for x-ray. There's less for psychiatry, although we have 65 hours. They have 144. There's less for obstetrics and gynecology. There's quite a bit more for orthopedics. So the total number of classroom hours for chiropractic is 2,887 versus 2,756 for medical.
So what you're saying is you're wicked smart.
Well, hypothetically. But we do put the time in.
Yeah.
You know, the schooling
I don't
is,
think people realize
the schooling
that
is the
either.
Same. Yeah, people yeah. think it's like some mail yeah. order thing.
Right. I got my degree online, you know.
Yeah, and it's not. And I one thing I will tell you that's different with chiropractic and medicine, and this is a generalization, but it's not as hard to get into chiropractic college as it is medical school. However, it's harder to stay in. The dropout rate is quite hard because people find that it's a lot of work.
Right,
it's
and they don't realize that, probably.
Yeah. And they're trying yeah. to keep the door open to encourage people to come into chiropractic school, of course, because they really want to help. We need more chiropractors in our country.
Yes. I think it's a cool job.
It's a very cool job
because yeah.
we're helping people in
you
a
are.
Drug-free Absolutely. Drug-free way.
Yep.
I love it.
Thank you, Jenny.
Oh, you're welcome, Mike.
For more information on chiropractic or actually Spinal Corrective Center, you can search us on Facebook or go to spinalcorrectivecenter.com.
I highly recommend it.
Be well, everybody.
You've been listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. For more information, go to spinalcorrectivecenter.com or call Dr. Jennifer at 603-673-5600. That's spinalcorrectivecenter.com or call 603-673-5600.